Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Nitzavim. This week, Rabbi Michael Hatton discusses Nitzavim. Rabbi Michael Hatton is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Michael Hatton.
In an unusual departure from typical years, the two parshiot of Nitzavim and Vayelech are this year read independently. Most years, the two are combined as a single reading on the Shabbat between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but this year they are read separately. The determining factor in the arrangement of the two parshiot is the day of the week on which Rosh Hashanah falls. Traditionally, Parshat Nitzavim, with its message of repentance and return, is to be read before Rosh Hashanah, the day of judgment inaugurating the season of Tshuva. But when Rosh Hashanah falls on Monday or Tuesday, as it does this year, then there is one Shabbat between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which falls 10 days later on either Wednesday or Thursday, and there is an additional Shabbat between Yom Kippur and the festival of Sukkot. These two Shabbatot therefore necessitate the division of Nitzavim Vayelech into two readings, in order to accommodate them both. The following podcast will address a mitzvah in Parshat Vayelech. With the reading of these sections, we are now nearing the conclusion of Sefer Devarim and of the entire Torah. Moshe has completed his review and explication of the mitzvot. He has assembled the whole people of Israel in order to reenact the events of Sinai. He has anxiously enjoined upon them to faithfully observe the tenets of the Torah. Now he is ready to die, and the leadership of Israel is formally transferred to his faithful and steadfast student, Yehoshua. Preparing to take his leave for the last time, and cognizant of the awesome challenges that loom ahead, Moshe heartens the people and Yehoshua with the same stirring charge. Be strong and courageous. Do not be fearful or afraid. With the completion of the text, Moshe entrusts the precious scroll to the hands of the Kohanim and the elders. The remarkable moment is marked by the introduction of the commandment of Hakel, or assembly. Once in 7 years, as the agricultural cycle begins anew, and the people prepare to celebrate the festival of Sukkot, the entire nation is to gather as one in order to hear a public reading of the Book of Devarim at the place that God will choose. Devarim chapter 31, verse 11. The event of Hakel, incorporating reading, study, and exhortation, encompassing the men, women, and children, mirrors and perpetuates the overwhelming experience of the revelation at Sinai. There as well, the entire people of Israel came together at the foot of the mountain to witness the awesome spectacle of God's teachings being proclaimed and to hear the thunderous pronouncement of his Decalogue. In order to sustain the sublimity of that moment, the command of assembly is introduced, to communicate to future generations an inkling of the grandeur of the revelation at Sinai. There are events and ideas, extraordinary ones, that outlast the individual and live on in the memory of a people, not as remote and time-worn events, but rather as living truths. The generation of the Exodus may have already expired and Moshe is soon to follow, but the word of our Lord will endure forever, as Isaiah proclaims in chapter 40. As Moshe completes his proclamation of the command of Hakel, God instructs him to summon Yehoshua and to stand with him at the tent of meeting in order to receive his word. As the two listen attentively, God spells out in ominous language the future infidelity of the people, their inevitable descent into idolatry, their abrogation of the covenant of the Torah, and the portentous prospect of divine inaccessibility. I will surely hide my face on that day because of the wickedness that they have done, for they have turned to other gods. The testimony to that eventuality, as well as the eternal hope that the people will one day return, is embodied in the twice stated injunction that follows. Now therefore write this song, teach it to the people of Israel, so that they know it by heart, in order that this song shall serve as my witness against them. When I bring them into the land that I swore to their ancestors, a land flowing with milk and honey, they shall eat, drink, and wax fat. Then they shall turn to other gods and worship them, thus abrogating my covenant to anger me. When many great tribulations and troubles have befallen them, then this song shall serve as witness, for it will never be forgotten from among their descendants. Devarim 31, verses 19 to 21. A number of critical themes are stated in this passage. Yehoshua is about to assume leadership of the people, and Moshe will die. Yehoshua will successfully bring them into the land, and they will settle it and enjoy its bounty. But many will be the dangers that lurk in its verdant valleys and on its terraced hilltops. The idolatry of the Canaanites, its alluring and licentious rites bereft of any higher responsibilities, its polytheistic relativism, numbingly soothing in its dearth of any ethical demands, will prey on the people of Israel. They will slowly succumb to its spells. Drunk with material success and excess, they will embrace the corrupt worship and the vacuous values of their erstwhile foes. The holy and precious covenant struck with the God of Israel will be discarded and forgotten. God will withdraw his providential care, and their fate will be no different than that of the inhabitants of any other small and insignificant country, almost certain extinction. God, however, provides the people of Israel with the possibility of recovery, the glimmer of restoration, the hope of return. The people of Israel will maintain their tenuous hold on human history to survive and to one day fulfill their mission as long as a remnant remembers the song and is able to transmit it further across the generations. There is much discussion among the commentaries concerning the identity of this song. Most see it as a reference to the Torah reading that we will do in 2 weeks, the Song of Ha'azinu, Moshe's eloquent and poetic outline of Jewish history. That poem's resonant words portend Israel's national success, inevitably followed by their abrogation of the covenant, their subsequent exile, dispersion, and dreadful torment among the nations, until such time as Israel finally remembers its exalted calling. The Song of Ha'azinu concludes with the promise of the people's eventual vindication, as God metes out justice to their oppressors and restores them to their land. It is not difficult to see how their safekeeping of such a startling vision, borne out exactly by the unfolding events of their history, might help sustain a people, even in the absence of their possessing any other meaningful connection to the very heritage that gave rise to it. Notwithstanding the straightforward and eminently plausible reading of the commentaries, earlier sources identified the song with the entire text of the Torah and saw in the command to preserve it the final instruction to write a Torah scroll. Rabba said, even if a person had inherited a Torah scroll from his parents, it is nevertheless an obligation for him to write his own. As the verse states, now therefore write this song. Talmud Bavli, Tractate Sanhedrin 21b. A parallel source in Minachot 30a echoes this one. Rabbi Yehoshua bar Abba said in the name of Rav Gidol, who stated in the name of Rav, one who purchases a Torah scroll in the marketplace has snatched for himself a mitzvah. If he himself writes it, however, it is considered as if he had received it from Mount Sinai. Rav Sheshet added, if he corrected even a single deficient letter, it is as if he had written the scroll in its entirety. The early medieval authorities already discussed the practical ramifications of this commandment, the final mitzvah of the Torah, and arrived at some novel conclusions. The 14th century German scholar, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, who wrote a useful compendium of Talmudic law that is still regarded as a standard text, said the following. The mitzvah to write a Torah scroll was applicable in earlier generations, when people studied the text from the actual scroll. Nowadays, however, when the Torah scroll is written and then deposited in the synagogue ark for the liturgical purpose of public readings, it is a positive mitzvah upon every Jew who has the means to write the text of the Chumash, the Mishnah, the Talmud, and their commentaries, in order to study from them, as well as with their children. The purpose of the command to write a Torah scroll was to facilitate the study of Torah, as the verse states, teach it to the children of Israel until they know it by heart. It is through the study of the Talmud and its commentaries that one comes to in fact know the explanation of the mitzvot and the laws. These then are the books that one is commanded to write. Commentary to Minachot 30a, paragraph 1. For Rabbeinu Asher, the command to write a Torah scroll is not only or even primarily an injunction to formally copy out the text of the Torah after the manner of a scribe. Rather, it is to provide the necessary groundwork for the direct study of Torah to be accomplished. In earlier times, the Torah scroll was itself the primary text that was studied, and the Torah therefore spoke of writing the song. Later, however, the oral traditions that had been associated with, and sometimes generated through the direct study of the text of the scroll, themselves developed into written sources, such as the Mishnah and the Talmud. The Torah scroll itself was no longer needed for direct study, and instead became redefined as a purely liturgical object that was publicly read at set times. Therefore, argues Rabbeinu Asher, since the commandment to write the Torah is really a command to provide texts to facilitate study, the mitzvah of writing a scroll is no longer to be understood literally as enjoining a scribal exercise with precise requirements concerning parchment, ink, quill, and specialized lettering. Rather, it is the mitzvah to write or to secure all manner of appropriate texts for Torah study, be they chumash, nach, mishnah, scroll form, folios, handwritten, printed. Of course, Rabbeinu Asher was active before the invention of the printing press, when all texts were precious commodities copied by hand. But his emphasis is not on the writing of the text per se, but rather on making it available for the purpose of study. This is an eminently reasonable position. It has the added advantage of absolving people for undertaking the onerous task of studying the scribal arts and transcribing a Torah scroll, a process that takes even accomplished scribes up to a year to complete. To adopt Rabbeinu Asher's position is to single out Torah study as a highly unusual and precious mitzvah. For where else does the Torah regard the necessary foundations of a mitzvah as a separate mitzvah act? Thinking, for instance, of other scribal commands, the Torah enjoins the placing of a mezuzah upon one's doorpost. It is obviously understood that in order to place a mezuzah, one must first write one. But the Torah does not consider the inscribing of the mezuzah to be a separate mitzvah act in its own right, or consider the sounding of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Here again, it is the case that one cannot possibly sound the shofar unless one first prepares the animal horn in an appropriate manner. But the Torah does not regard these preparations as a separate mitzvah, but simply as a prerequisite. It must therefore be the case that the mitzvah of Torah study is so paramount that even the steps necessary to provide the required texts are enjoined by the Torah as freestanding mitzvah acts. It must be pointed out that the Rambam disagreed with Rabbeinu Asher, and he ruled that the mitzvah introduced to write a Torah scroll, as does a scribe, is precisely that, just as the straightforward reading of the Talmudic sources indicate. Rambam makes no provision for the fulfillment of this mitzvah through the acquisition or commissioning of other Torah texts. What could be the scriptural source for Rabbeinu Asher's inventive opinion, an interpretation that was incorporated into subsequent codes of law as normative? Recall the earlier incidents in the Parsha that included the formal transfer of leadership to Yehoshua, the completion of the Torah text, the commandment of assembly, the injunction to write the song, all of them key to ensuring the survival of a remnant. Clearly, the thrust of all of the above is the notion of perpetuating the Torah's teachings as living laws that are transmitted to subsequent generations, with all of the acceleration of the experience at Sinai. Really, says Rabbeinu Asher, the study of Torah is qualitatively different, for it alone can guarantee the continued existence of the Jewish people. Through the study of its laws and instructions, the people of Israel can yet achieve their destiny. The continuity that the Torah craves can be guaranteed by ensuring that the texts needed for its study are always available and accessible. The Torah scrolls that fill many a synagogue ark will not ensure the survival of the Jewish people, says Rabbeinu Asher. One scroll more or one scroll less, when those scrolls themselves cannot serve as study texts, will not generate more Torah learning, the lifeblood of the people of Israel. Only the ongoing devotion to the study of the text, an activity that has always been regarded as defining in Jewish tradition and culture, can ensure its eternity. For that study to take place, appropriate texts must be available. The provision of those texts for the future of Israel therefore becomes the independent mitzvah act of facilitating study, because the survival of Israel as a faith community and a nation depends upon it. Therefore, says the Torah, write this song and teach it to the people of Israel so that they may know it by heart, in order that the song shall serve as my witness against them. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hatton. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.